Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Barling and Barrett on Crime. My name is Simon Barrett, and I'm joined by my good friend Manny Barling. Manny, hello.
Hey, Simon, how are you today? How's the weather in Mississippi?
And actually, it's warmed up again, which is nice. I was fed up with it only reaching it into the low 60s.
Wow. We've been blessed with some 80-degree weather on the West Coast, but if we can cut the noise out in the background, we'll be okay.
Well, Bogey decided he wanted to join the show, and he started chirping and chiming in and meowing like crazy, Simon. So I went to go get a chair and, of course, knocked everything over. Bogey's going to sit in on this with us during the recording. And I don't know if anybody's seen Bogey's picture, but he's an all-black cat. He's a rescue cat, and he thinks he's a person.
Perfect. And, Ashley's kind of spoilt the mystery, because I was just about to ask Manny, I understand we have a special guest, and I was going to invite him to do the instructions, or introductions.
Bogey did it again, he spoiled it.
Yeah, my cat wants time on the air. What are we supposed to do about that?
Okay, Manny, I still want you to do the intro, because people don't know Ashley.
Our special guest today is Ashley F. Brooks, who's an actress, retired nurse, and, of course, written 4 books on health, and she's extraordinarily gifted in these particular areas. And Ashley was a co-host with you and myself on Surviving the 21st Century, and is an extraordinarily gifted young lady. And if I don't say that, she just may well divorce me, because she doubles as my wife. So, Ashley, welcome to the show.
Thank you, honey. That was nice. Can you repeat that?
Tonight over cocktails, honey.
Ooh, I like that.
I'll make sure I send you that clip of audio, and you can hold it over his head.
I'm going to do that, Simon. I like that.
Whose side are you on?
Well, I'm also hoping that the infamous T.J. Hart will be joining us. I think he's chronologically challenged. Well, he lives in Iowa. what can I say? But I'm sure he'll be with us shortly. Manny, where do we start this week?
Well, I think we're going to pick a very interesting place to start. We're going to start with teachers. We're going to start with the story of how teachers are basically date or marry students of theirs who frequently are underage or frequently wait till they're overage. No one knows the truth of that. And the question is this an act of pedophilia, or is it true love, or is it pedophilia if they get married later on, and all the various combinations. And we all started all this with a story this week about a 41-year-old teacher who quit teaching and married one of his students who was about to graduate from high school. She graduates in June, and how her mother has launched a huge program claiming it was some form of pedophilia and that he should be arrested. But yet, as so many people have asked, well, why didn't she do something about this? And why didn't she catch her child who supposedly wrote 8,000 internet tweets and emails to him? So there's some really interesting questions in that. And so, Simon, why don't you jump in and tell us what your viewpoint is about, teachers who date students?
Well, I mean, the obvious story has to be Letourneau.
Oh, my favorite.
Yeah, Mary, is it Mary Kay Letourneau?
Yes, I believe that's the correct way you pronounce it. And one of the things that doesn't come out is Mary Kay Letourneau, besides being a distinguished teacher in a time, was the son of either a state senator or a U.S. senator at the time all these events occurred, comes from a very good family, And she was about 34 years old in the middle 90s when they say she raped a 12-year-old, but when that's technically what it is because of statutory rape, but nobody knows whether it's consenting or not. But then again, every parent says when a 12-year-old has sex with an older woman, it can't be consenting under any circumstances. But I've known some 12-year-old boys who would probably chase a 30-year-old teacher. So even that is of somewhat interest. So as you know, she was sentenced to prison, 6 years in prison, and given, I believe, a six-month sentence, rest suspended. And within 2 months, they caught her in the back seat of a car with this same 12-year-old boy, and she went back to jail and served almost the complete 6 years. I think it was 5.5 years. And at the end of the day, they got married when she got out of school and became of age, and now they're married, living together, and they are basically had 2 children of their own. So she had 4 children her first marriage and 2 from this marriage. So that gives our listeners somewhat of a viewpoint of Mary Kay Letourneau if they haven't heard this story, which it started, I think, in 1996 or 1997. So did I miss anything on that one, Simon?
No, but the Letourneau story is a really, really interesting one in that many people just view it as salacious, delightfully salacious. You know, here's a woman in her 30s, you know, picking up a 12-year-old boy. At the time that the case occurred, and you know, most people looked at it and went, "Wow, lucky kid."
Well, they're always. Oh, that's the male viewpoint. The mothers don't adopt that viewpoint at all. I guarantee you.
Okay, Ashley, what's your view?
I just think it's a self-esteem issue. There are various theories that various psychiatrists feel that occur with pedophilia, because to me this is pedophilia. It's a 30-year-old woman with a 12-year-old? Come on. And during that time, there's several things that are going on. It's a self-esteem issue with the female. And obviously, to me, in my opinion of this, looking on, I'd have to speak to her, but, you know, it's a social issue in which she is underdeveloped socially. And subsequently, she, you don't think so, Manny? So you can't communicate with people, and you're not good with people, and you obviously can't date. And so what do you pick, a 12-year-old? You pick a 12-year-old. You pick a child. That's a 12-year-old child.
Well, see, as I said, this is, Simon, this is where female viewpoints and male viewpoints diverge. Jump in. Go ahead.
Well, it seems to me that at the time she was having this relationship with a 12-year-old, wasn't she still married?
That's correct. So it wasn't that she was out salaciously looking, you know, for somebody who she couldn't find. She basically was apparently unhappily married, because I guess if you're happily married, you don't do this. But that, so there are different causes in this particular case, which is one of the reasons I think it's so unique.
And
but,
man, it is to me, though, underdeveloped dysfunctional behavior. And the only way that a pedophile feels any control is that, and reduces the anxiety of no social abilities, is by being with children.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm just saying that factually you're wrong in the sense that in this particular case, she was not someone out there on the move. Oddly enough, he was a student of hers from the time he was in second grade, so it had a long relationship, not to misuse that word, which probably added to it. But
do you think it's an Oedipal contest?
I think there are a lot of things involved, but the point is he's underage. There was a time 50, 100 years ago where women routinely underage ran away with home from men, partly because women were more abused, not only sexually, but abused in terms of being slaves to their families, as they are in different cultures, and they just got sick of being treated that way and just didn't want to work for their parents the rest of their life on a farm, for example, it was quite common for farm girls to run away. So,
and that happened during the Elizabethan laws in which they allowed children with the labor, right, back in the 19th century. And then when the isn't that the time period that the churches allowed the poor children went in and the churches took care of the poor children, and then as a result of that, correct me on this, Manny, if I'm wrong,
no.
and then the churches put the children out, and that started a whole... They all ran away?
Well, Simon, you can talk to that, because I believe those were labor houses in England during that period of time in the late, what would be the previous century, and quite frequently that would happen. A child who was an orphan or a family who were in debt, or for a variety of reasons back when debtor's prison did exist in England, it was not uncommon for girls to be sent to this type of environment and work. Isn't that correct?
Oh, absolutely. It was without doubt a form of indentured servitude. You would take your child, preferably female, and that they'd become maid, cook, whatever.
The whatever is the part we're talking about.
Right, and it's the whatever that's very scary.
Yeah.
But I don't think you can lay the blame on England's door. Basically, the very similar things happened here in the U.S.,
Well, some of that was indentured servitude. No, Ashley raised England. That's why I wanted you to address it, because it was a common problem across the world. There were no child labor laws, and essentially women were just another form of labor, and it was not uncommon for them to be pressed into some type of labor situation. And by the way, the world during those times didn't seem to care at all that women were working and that they were subjected to all of this. They were just another form of needed labor in our society.
Yeah, but you know, we're talking something slightly different from the need for labor.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, labor came 9 months later.
That's so true, Simon.
That happens in America. Well, I'll give an example. I said to Ashley in an earlier discussion that from my experiences, one of the largest areas of this occurs with babysitters in our country. The amount of sexual contact between fathers and babysitters is appalling.
And that brought up for me, it never occurred to me until I started reading all this material on pedophilia and really looking at the material. The neighbor, I would finish babysitting, they got home extra late, I was 11, 12 years old, and the husband went off, took me to a separate room and said, oh, you're studying opera singing right now, I'm in the church, gave me a gift, which was all his music, and drove me home, and I live next door. And the guy just creeped me out so much that I didn't understand what was going on. But for me, and he didn't touch me or anything, but it was just creepy, and I never went and sat for them again. It just made me so uncomfortable. I was 11, 12 years old, Simon. And I think a lot of women have these buried stories. In fact, they did one study in a college where they found that 1 out of 5 women in that college had been sexually abused in their lifetime.
Well, actually, that's
just one college.
But that's the stats, Ashley. Generally, every survey that I've seen throughout my life shows that 1 out of 5 women have been sexually abused, and 1 out of 10 men. The numbers are just startling.
Oh, Simon, did you know that 5 children die every day as a result of child abuse?
Oh, yes. That horrifies me.
Did you know that the 80% of those kids are 4 years old or younger?
Yep.
I was reading these statistics, and I just couldn't get over it. Estimated annual cost is $124 billion to the United States.
So tell me, why doesn't the Tea Party try to save us money and have that, you know, do something about that? All these good Christian Tea Partiers should do something to stop pedophilia in this country, and guess what? They could cut down the cost of all these entitlements they want to slash.
There's a place definitely that needs to have a view, and if they're going to fight for abortion and all the things that are being fought for, how can you fight for abortion if 5 children die every single day from abuse? I'm a little confused by that. I see before it doesn't count, but now this counts.
Okay, Simon, jump in on that.
All right. Both of you know that my wife, Jan, follows child abuse cases.
Well, let's be fair to Jan. Jan is probably one of the foremost advocates on behalf of children that I've known in my life, and I commend her for it. She's done
absolutely
a marvelous job of representing those children whose interests are not served by the press and other people, and she's terrific at it.
Yeah, I mean, every day she finds some nasty story that just should not exist. I mean, she had 2 today. Yeah, 2-year-old kid beaten senseless by the mother's boyfriend. I mean, this isn't right. You know, where has society gone wrong?
That's a good question.
I absolutely agree with you on that. And when I worked in emergency room years and years ago, the story, I was really young, I was in my 20s, and this little boy came into the emergency room, and he had fallen. And the mother was just beautiful mother, really clean cut, you know, well-dressed, meticulous woman, very nervous, upset about her son who was unconscious. And the older, wiser nurse took me, was in the booth with me, and she said, "Go get security." I didn't understand why, Simon. I went and got security, and the mom was taken out. And the more she shaved the head, this child had scars covering every part of this child's head, every part of his head. His body had been so beaten when we took his clothes off that I had trouble was crying over this kid. And this kid died. This child, now I feel okay talking about this because this was public news in Chicago at the time. And I was in my 20s, and it's had a permanent impact and scar on me because I've never forgotten it. This poor little innocent child was, I don't know, 8, 9 years old. This mom took a baseball bat and beat the hell out of this kid and warned social services that I can't stand my child, don't send him home. The last time she beat him.
Whoa.
And social services sent this child home with the mom because it's much better, much easier, at least on social services. They don't have to go find a home for the child. Where do you put this child?
Okay, here's my big question. And Manny knows that I'm going to ask it because I ask it every time.
Let me go listen to the previous show quickly.
Every time we get onto this story or this basic subject, is the problem funding? Because that's what I keep hearing. We don't have the funding available to, you know, do CPS the way it needs to be done. Ashley, is it just a money problem, or is this a problem that people would prefer to sweep under the rug?
You know, Simon, it's a tough one to answer.
Well, let me jump into that. As a lawyer, you see some of the problems is the fact that we have a society who does not teach women to be parents. So a great many women are not prepared to be a parent. Then throw in all of the problems that go in this society and marriages and things that can happen, it gets even more difficult for them. So we start off with a situation where we don't prepare women to be mothers, which is really strange because society did a wonderful job of that for centuries, but in recent times they're not doing it at all. So now we have unprepared women of every, and not just minorities, but everywhere, to be a parent who now are frustrated because they don't know how to be a parent and then react in a negative way towards their children who they blame for the, whatever their problem is with this. So that's a big contributor right there. Go ahead, Ashley. You have something you want to add?
I also think that because this the family structure breaks down into two different structures. One is going to be this chaotic, dysfunctional family that you're going to spot up front. And the kids, you know, obviously people are going to be looking to see for the dysfunction. They're going to spot it. Something's going to be done. And then there's the normal family. So for that lady, which is common, it goes unnoticed because it's normal. She looked perfectly normal. So to social services, even though she's quietly sitting there saying, I really don't like my kid. Please don't send him home. You know, they're saying, well, here's a functioning, well-established family, and this is the role. And even though this is passed down from, the abuse has been passed down from her being abused to, you know, previous family members being abused to, you know, now she has killed her son, that this is a normal-looking family. And I think some of it is that, Simon. I think that could be part of it, that it gets ignored.
Well, you know, I'm still concerned because I think that CPS, and obviously the name changes from state to state, that they basically run with sometimes double standards. That there are instances where they leap in guns blazing, and create havoc where they don't need to, and yet there are many cases where they appear to turn an absolute blind eye, and you know after a child dies, they go, oh well, we just didn't have the manpower.
Right.
Well, excuse number five is not a good excuse because that's really what it is. And by the way, that seems to be a standard excuse from everybody in our government when they don't want to cop out that they've screwed something up or didn't do what they're supposed to. It just seems like that's the line you hear every time, right? Oh, we didn't have the manpower. Oops. Oops. Oh, well, if we had a higher budget, we could have done that. Oops. And it just seems like that one long oops after another.
And since we started off on pedophilia, 17.3% of the child abuse, or the child abuse that I'm speaking of, 17.3% of it is sexual. So that's still a huge, enormous piece of that pie that we're talking about. And sometimes, Simon, I wonder, and I don't know if this is okay to say on the show or not, but it's sometimes I wonder if it isn't a race issue, too. It's a race cultural it's a mixed bag of things that go into the whole thing of pedophilia and abuse. Like for, and I know you know these things because you have been working with them, where 12% of the children out of 1,000 are white and double that for the black children, and the same percentage is also with Hispanic. And so it becomes like a cultural thing that's passed down from the family. And some of it is brought from socioeconomical, and it's also brought from other countries and cultures into our culture.
Oh, I'm so glad that you mentioned that. I want to tell you two stories that they're both absolutely true. That they don't involve pedophilia per se. And obviously, I have changed the names to protect the guilty. I'm very concerned about whether pedophilia is genetic or a learned response. My first story concerns a woman who was in her late 30s, early 40s, and she was part of our social group. You know, we would meet, have a couple of beers, some laughs, and she would always have a story, and it would inevitably be about her finding the youngest available male, taking him home and doing whatever she wanted to do with the young man, and then throwing him out of the bed and her house at, you know, 3-4 o'clock in the morning. The second story is a guy that I worked with for a couple of years. We'll call him Mick, although outside of his hearing range, we just called him the Basher. I mean, his favorite was to, tie one on, go home, and beat the crap out of his wife. She turned up at our doorstep, probably a dozen times. The worst occasion, she had broken ribs, a couple of black eyes, and I was appalled. And we kept saying to her, "Well, leave the guy, run away, go somewhere else." "Oh, but I love him." And then, bit by bit, we got the whole story. This was the third basher that she'd been involved with. It was like, I can only date people that are going to bash me. Absolutely horrible stuff. So, is it genetic or is it a learned response?
Well, I think there's a combination of both. I think that statistically, although I've not seen a real survey on this, women who have been sexually abused have the highest rate of divorce. And quite frequently, they do that because they feel they don't deserve anything better than that. And they're just confirming, what happened to them younger. And I'm not saying this particular woman was abused, but that is a common
she was,
problem.
By the way.
Yeah, but I could tell that she has the profile.
And that's just, it's another symptom of low self-esteem. And the only way she could have a feeling of a normalcy is if she has it occur to her so that she can feel normal. That's normal behavior to her.
Well, last week I sent you an interesting article by someone I know who finally came out of the closet about being sexually abused when she was younger, and actually her daughter did it for her with her blessing. And it was interesting because she also went through a number of husbands and had a very difficult time maintaining normal relationships with men. And in fact, recently she sent me a note saying she was so happy that I was so happily married, my life had gone so smoothly, and that was her one failing in life, was that she could never maintain normal relationships with men because of that. And my heart goes out to her because I've seen that repeatedly throughout the years.
It causes permanent scarring within that person emotionally, and it doesn't go away. And then psychiatrists also say that they did studies where they also were looking at the physical damage that occurs to people, that they start having obesity and other illnesses because it becomes a chronic disease. So one disease of the mental illness, it causes mental illness in that person, and then it goes into other problems as well. And it's a lifelong, it's like being in a car wreck that you can't get over. That person emotionally is going to be in a permanent car wreck the rest of their life. And if it's not stopped, society will pay for it. The person pays for it. The society will pay for it. That person's children will pay for it. And it will not stop until we move forward and make it stop.
But how do we make it stop?
Well, that's the problem, is I belong to that group who believe that a great deal of this is hereditary, but a lot of it is done by the environment in which one lives in. The abused person and everything that goes with her life is someone who's environmentally affected. The person who's doing the abusing is the one who I think may, if not probably, have some type of genetic predisposition towards this.
And they did do studies on that, Manny. There have been extensive studies where they believe that during the development of that child, the hormonal level affects the brain and the hypothalamus, and they underdevelop. So that part of their brain doesn't ever develop properly, and that's some of the studies and research that they're doing right now on pedophilia to see if that's an impact.
Well, go ahead.
Let's go back to Mary Kay Letourneau. 34 years old, or at least I think she was 34.
No, you're correct.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a teacher. Last time I checked, teachers have to have been to school themselves. Yeah, they should be relatively intelligent. I mean, what drove her to be interested in a 12-year-old kid?
Well, that's where I think she differs from others, is because her profile's not unlike any others I've seen. You don't see a history of people getting married. You know, the people who do these type of things generally move along. And I told you a story. I was young. I was in college. I had a next-door neighbor who was a 41-year-old English teacher at a local high school who married one of his students, but married her the year after she graduated, which, of course, raised questions about what went on during the time, although they both always said to me that no, none of that went on while she was under 18 or whatever. And the funny part was her father was 1 year younger than her husband, but he, of course, had an alcohol problem, which made it very difficult to assess where this was going, but last time I talked to them, they were still married some 20-some years later. So you have these ones that sort of break the bank when it comes to facts. But if you talk about the traditional ones, then they are simply guys and sometimes women who basically have genetic defects that makes them attracted to women, to younger people. And in the case of Mary Kay Letourneau, hers just seems so out of whack with almost the profiles we see. For example, as Ashley points out, Catholic priests have a almost identical description and characters of disorders as pedophiles. And so it shouldn't surprise anyone that they do become pedophiles. But yet, maybe that's one reason they become priests, is because they can't function in any other kind of society. It's
Ben, can I read the allegations on these priests?
Sure.
This was taken off of the sexual abuse of the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church was allowed to do their own investigation. So the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops actually went in and did the investigation themselves, which to me, and that happened back in 2002, was disturbing because to me it's like doing research by non-independent people.
Oh,
you know, so the information contained in the survey went to 195 dioceses, and what they had found was 4,392 priests supposedly had been falsely accused of some from 1950 to 2002. 4,392 priests. That's 4% of all of these priests had allegations of abuse. 4% from 1950 to 2002.
Okay.
I found that just disgusting.
Okay, I have no wish to interrupt you, but I just noticed that we do have a caller on the line, and it's none other, direct from Des Moines, Iowa, radio talk show host for WOW FM, TJ Hart.
Wow! Hey, TJ Hart! Oh, my God!
Hi, TJ.
Hello. How's everyone today?
We'll drink better when we hear your voice.
Absolutely.
TJ, as I understand it, you earned your keep a couple of weeks ago. You were hosting the morning show between 5 a.m. and 9, and then doing your old noon gig from noon till 3. That's
yes.
a lot of stinking talking. Ever yeah. thought of running for political office?
Unfortunately, with some changes that have come down the pike, that's going to probably stay that way for about another month until we get our new talk show host, Mike Huckabee, will be joining us on April the 9th or 10th, something like that, April 10th, I believe. So I'll just keep the chair warm for him.
that's a great choice. By the way, it's good for him to finally get a job. I mean, but he'll be an excellent talk show host for you.
Yes, yes, he will. Very nice man.
Yep,
it's all about conversation and less confrontation, so that's going to be the key there.
And TJ, I need to introduce you to Ashley. Ashley is an incredibly intelligent lady, so mm-hmm. watch out.
Wait a minute. You're having cocktails with her tonight?
Right thing to say, Simon.
Hello?
You'll get the joke in a minute.
So, and TJ, a question for you. We've been going round and round on an old story, Mary Kay Letourneau. You know, 34 years old, picks up a 12-year-old boy and has her evil way. I mean, do you remember the case?
Yeah, it was very disturbing. Here you have a teacher in a position of authority who had a great deal of control over a very young boy, and a young boy who really didn't know right from wrong in the situation with the grown-up world with sex. And next thing you know, I think he's fathered, what, over the years, two or three children with her now?
Two.
Yes.
Two. But even after going to prison, she didn't learn the lesson. She hooked back up with him, and I don't know what drives people to that. I'm not a psychologist, but I've just seen way too many times situations where that has been cropping up almost in the news now two or three times a week.
Really? In your area? Really? That much?
Wow.
No. Across the United States and also in the Great Britain as well.
Yeah.
Europe
yeah.
and America. So... It's
don't blame Great Britain. We don't do that kind of thing.
He defended Britain when I brought up the Elizabethan law that started a lot of this. Why did you say that, Simon?
Well, but let's put it this way, Simon. I read an awful lot about it in the British press. Well, I'm not going to say that it's Britain per se, but they're the ones that seem to have a good time reporting on that around the world.
Well, I thought the News of the World was out of print. Murdoch had walked away.
Well, you've got the Telegraph, you've got the Guardian, you've got all those other things, and they're all over the place. Oh, and don't forget the Sun is there.
Oh yeah,
hey. Insert laughter right there.
And you know something, you know, Simon, the worst part is they came to L.A. because you know that's where Fox News is based, so we just can't seem to get rid of them. Murdoch's like a bad dream in this city.
Oh, TJ, you don't work for Murdoch, do you?
Oh, hell no, never have.
Oh,
okay. Wait a second, I was a guest on Fox a few times with Bill O'Reilly covering some crime cases, but I never received a paycheck from him, no. I probably would have turned it away. You know, that phone hacking mess and what have you that he's gone over there with the UK. I don't know. Just not a good thing some days.
You know, what gets me, TJ, is he, of course, claims he knew nothing about it. And I have a friend of mine who's was the founder of Fox News. And one of the reasons he quit is because Murdoch would call him at 2 o'clock in the morning to ask questions and was probably the worst hands-on person he ever worked with in his life, and he just hated working for him, and he eventually retired because of it. Every time I see Murdoch talk about how he didn't know what was going on, I think of my friend retiring because he wouldn't go away.
No, it doesn't surprise me.
No,
it doesn't surprise me.
I think the word is micromanager, and I think, well, look at your show. You do a long talk show. Can you imagine if you had a news director who was micromanaging everything you did on that show? That'd be really tough, wouldn't it?
Well, it wouldn't. It would work. It wouldn't work at all.
Yeah, he'd be doing it himself, right?
Yeah. Well, the thing is that what you need to do is get the best people available for your budget, and let them do what they do best, turn them loose, and give them quick reviews and quick sharpening points in order to improve the techniques. But by and large, you've already got the package before you started, and you can't sit there and micromanage a talent to the point where they become a robot. Otherwise, you should have just hired the damn robot.
Yeah, I agree with you. And
okay,
by the way, that applies in most businesses. If you're going to micromanage your employees, you might as well not even hire them.
Mm-hmm.
And TJ, I don't mean any slight here. The Des Moines area is a big one, but has there been any news coverage about the sex abuse case at Miramont Elementary School in the Des Moines area?
You mean the one out in California?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah, there's been quite a bit. There's also been a lot of back and forth on it as well. It seems that, if I remember correctly, the story is that they wound up firing all the teachers and basically started all new so that they could start a whole new culture there. It might have been wrong to do that in the eyes of some people, but then again, it may have been correct in the minds of others. See how that works out.
Well, TJ, that's not exactly correct. What happened is there were allegations of a female teacher or someone assisting in moving the children to this particular teacher. They were having difficulty with the investigation, and they got up one day and said, the only way we can get any hold on this is to get everybody out of here, because, you know, parents were extremely upset and going, well, who is it? Who is it? And
Yeah,
so what happened is, out of abundance of caution, they didn't fire him. They relocated him to other schools so they could prevent problems with the basic investigation.
Gotcha.
Don't they still pay these teachers, though? Don't they go to, like, a rubber room or whatever it is they call these teachers that they get set aside while they're investigating, and then the public continue to pay them as teachers even though they have been, you know, probability is that they are pedophiles?
Well,
are you talking about administrative leave or something like that?
Yeah. Isn't there like some sort of place where they're sent?
Well, yes. What happens is teachers are in investigation who've done that. In this particular case, none of the teachers involved with Miramont, other than the one who was charged with a crime, had any issues with that. So they were just sent to other schools to teach while the investigation was going on, because there was really no evidence that any of them had committed a crime. But there were concerns about the overall relationship. So, yes, that does happen, and it's a common occurrence at various places in the nation. New York City has a problem with this as well.
And they get paid a lot of money, $100,000 or something. They get paid a lot of money, right?
No, they get paid their salary.
Oh, okay.
So go ahead, CJ, back to your area. What else have you heard about the both Simon and I have felt that it was an undercover story, and we find
it was. You know, he's got a little bit of play here, but here in Des Moines, we've not really had that kind of problem. It seems to happen in a lot of other places rather than this part of the Midwest for some reason, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
The only thing that I read online here recently is that one of the new things with the school is that they can no longer blindfold the kids anymore, because that was what one of the alleged perpetrator did, and that the simulation with butter can't be done anymore, and that was about it. I mean, one of those things you go, oh, and just kind of turn the page and say, well, that was nice, and go on.
Yeah, and by the way, I've always believed in those simulations and did them with my children, because I think that it helps them the same way I taught my children to put on a mask and to walk around the house with a mask on and be able to figure out where they were in case lights were out and other things to teach them different forms of sensory perception, because most people don't do that. And
it's a good thing to do. I think kids need to learn that. Well, I certainly did that as a kid.
Oh, okay. Tell me what we're going to do. We're going to go out to the phone lines. We have Missing Kids TV on the line. What's your name and what's your question for us?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Hello?
Can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Steve. I run a show here on Blog Talk Radio as well. I call it Missing Kids TV. It airs on Fridays at 1 p.m. Central. I just had a question. I mean, we got a lot of guests in the chat room here, so I was wondering, are you familiar with CLOMA, C-L-O-M-A, as it relates to pedophilia?
No, I'm not, as it relates to pedophilia, no. Go ahead. Much
in the same respect, I mean, there's lots of advocates and people like myself that I've been doing this sort of thing for over 4 years now. There's a lot of advocates for, you know, the missing and people that try to find fugitives and who have various different causes and things as it relates to raising awareness of this kind of thing. And so if you were to consider us like the good guys, quote unquote, CLOMA would be an organization that is the bad guys. CLOMA stands for Child Lover Online Media Activism, okay, C-L-O-M-A. These guys are kind of like the anti, you know, good guys or whatever. They're the ones that are trying to promote pedophilia, like on the internet and, you know, other places like that. And I was just wondering if you guys were aware of such a thing. You know?
Well, I'm not aware of that one, but we've encountered several other ones in our studies, and there are more than a few. Last week, there's one in Canada. We actually had callers arrogantly call in from some of those groups trying to act like they had some relevance in the society, which they don't.
Because if they can, as you know, desensitize everybody and make themselves to be normal, then they feel normal within society, and it's a horrible thing.
Right.
And people need to know that that's going on. You're absolutely right, and thanks for calling in.
Oh, of course, of course. I might add that
shortly before I moved away from the state of Florida, it was about a year or so ago, there was a fellow who was caught online distributing an online manual on how to seduce children. I think 177 people were caught in this net that the Florida Department of Law Enforcement put out. And it was quite an investigation, but they nailed about 177 people with this. And the guy was basically trying to, like you say, lower the bar for society and let those who are interested in on the techniques of how to lure children.
Well, sadly, that's not a isolated incident, though. You know, I talked about this a few weeks ago on my own show. There's a thing out there known as the dark net. I'm sure you guys have probably heard of it. It's a part of the internet that is intentionally hidden from public view. It's like, you know, password encrypted things and, you know, super hackers that, like, go out of their way to make sure that nobody knows, you know, of this, of their existence or whatever. And, you know, these scumbags, for lack of a different term, you know, they just, it's you know, it's very sad, you know, that these kinds of things exist. It really is, you know. They go out of their way to promote this kind of disgusting behavior. It's just really sad, you know.
Well, have you ever come across an organization, NAMBLA?
Oh, of course, yes. The National Man-Boy Love Association, yes. Yes. Like I said, I've been doing this for a long time. I'm very familiar with that. Not everybody that's listening to this show on live or on a replay is familiar with that, but that's part of why I do what I do, is to help raise awareness so that the average Joe citizen that's listening to your show or my show or any other activist show gets a little bit of an insight as to these terms and this terminology and these groups and stuff like that.
And I think it's awareness is really, it's vital. In fact, one of the three emergency room doctors had put a study together, which you may have seen last January. And in the study, they started studying the amount of abuse of children who actually had been through the ER, and they found that at least every one-third of the children that were diagnosed with abuse had at least one visit to the emergency room. So the only way that anybody, including myself as a medical professional, can know to look for this is if we know those statistics and everybody's aware of it, then you start looking differently at the children as they come in and at not just buying into the stories and really looking.
Yeah, I want to come back to something you said about numbers and things. I actually discovered a variety of statistics, which I really disagreed with, and the basis of statistics is that pedophilia is actually down, and I don't think so at all. I think that it's better hidden, not down at all.
That's what the CDC national statistics are saying right now, and I don't agree with it either, Manny. I think it's hidden. I think it is hidden.
Well, there's hidden for two ways and in two reasons. Number one is to point out usually the reported episodes of pedophilia occur at a much later age. So right now there could be a wide number of children being basically abused, and there's no way of knowing until they reach an age where they're willing to talk about it. That's problem number one. Problem number two is that how do you gain statistics on this? If they want to say the number of people prosecuted and convicted of pedophilia is down, then they're probably going to be accurate in that regard. But people should understand that the numbers are significantly up and that they're more emboldened than they've ever been. And I think our listener will agree with that, too. The Internet has given them a new marketplace to peddle their wares.
Actually, listener, or caller, Missing Kids TV, you obviously run a radio program.
Yes.
You obviously care a great deal about this subject. I mean, where are we all going wrong?
We being who exactly? Activists or just the public?
Yeah, not activists. We being the 99.9% of the population that don't go around sexually abusing our children. I mean, what's the solution?
It's two parts, really. There's two parts to it, in my opinion. I'm not a college doctorated person. I am just I'm a parent. I am just a fan, you know, or whatever, you know, just one guy with one computer, just trying to make a difference in the world. But in my opinion, the problem is twofold, okay? One, you have to raise awareness, like we mentioned earlier. You have to have people that know that problems of missing children and fugitives and pedophilia and stuff like that exist. That's half the problem. Half the problem is getting people to know that such a thing exists, okay? I mean, I'm looking right now at 15 people in your chat room as we broadcast live. Some may be listening to this on a replay, but out of those 14 people, I've been posting links to my page and you have links to your show and stuff. The other half of the problem is getting people to care. Okay, these people that are listening to the show right now, they could listen to the whole show from beginning to end, and if they don't take those steps to like our pages, share the messages, tell their friends, etc., it'll go in one ear and out the other, and there's really nothing much that you can do, because I could be standing on the highest mountaintop in the world and broadcast my message to everyone. And if they listen and they don't absorb the information or don't tell the information to someone else, then it's a complete waste of time.
TJ, I want to bring you in because
sure.
Radio is your game. I mean, Do you think that what we have is a message that we can get out there, we can get people to understand and care about?
Indeed, the ball has been rolling. My radio show from time to time touches on that topic and touches off on that topic with a great deal of passion. Also, TV, there's basically an entire network that seems to be dedicated to things like that, which is, headline news. When you get into the evening primetime shows, nine-tenths of them deal with either missing, exploited, or abused children. And, they do a tremendous job to the point where some folks almost can't watch at times because they do get so on the edge with that, and perhaps maybe the message itself is so distasteful upon hearing it, upon seeing it for the first time, that some people shun away from that because it's such a shock to their senses, they just don't want to hear anymore. And it probably takes a little while for them to actually absorb the message that we've been hearing and that we've been putting out for years. And I do remember that when I was a young man, I heard the first story on the news about a child being abused. I said, "Don't turn that off." And I turned the TV off. I didn't want to hear it. I was so disgusted just hearing the slightest notion that somebody could harm a child. And now I'm pretty much an activist.
Well,
to get these people wrangled up now. So.
Can I ask you a question? Being in the radio business, because I'm not a professional radio person in any shape or manner or whatever. How much do you believe that media is part of the problem? Because, I mean, I mentioned this a few weeks ago, I think it was 2 weeks ago, I did a show on my show that I called Cases of Color, okay, where I spent the entire two-hour show dedicating that show to cases of minorities, like Latinos and African Americans and stuff, because they have what you can call blonde white girl syndrome. If it's not a blonde white girl that goes missing, they kind of get overlooked. You know, you get like the Natalie Holloway case or the Elizabeth Smart case or something like that, and that gets plastered all over the news, left, right, and center. But you get a missing African American child or a missing Latino child, and it hardly ever gets mentioned.
In radio, you're colorblind. In TV, it's what looks good. And I hate to say that, and this is sick, but this is the truth. And if you can ever get anybody in TV to admit this, you'll be lucky. But it's true. If a child is not universally appealing or a missing person is not universally appealing, guess what? Well, it doesn't quite look good for TV. Criteria one, it's a TV show in most news cases, believe it or not. Believe it or not. I found that out the hard way when I was doing a national TV show. I think I've told this to Simon a few times. It's the last time I did this one show. And, I waited until the limousine dropped me off before I quit because it was a long walk from the radio station, from the TV station. But they had a certain member of a story that was supposedly missing. And the report was out that this young lady was missing. Hell with it. That lady was in the same, the young lady who was at that time just turned 18, was sitting in the TV studio with me for an hour and a half before I went on the air. We even had a conversation. I'm trying to tell the producers of this national cable show that the young lady is not missing. In fact, I am talking with her right now. To which they said, "Wow. Oh, for the purposes of this TV show, she's missing. We've already got the videotape, the insets, and all of the production set to go. So hush about it. Tonight, she's still missing." And I walked in. That was it. It was the last time. It was the longest ride in limo I ever had in my life. I couldn't wait till we pulled into my drive. I called up the producer and said, "That's it. Adios, I'm a ghost."
Oh my gosh! If the police would have picked you up, what would have happened to you?
What's that?
If the police had picked you up with her,
no, she wasn't in my car. But she wasn't wanted for any crime at that time. But the scuttlebutt was that she was missing it.
Wow.
It reminds me of my favorite movie joke. If you've ever seen Heart of Darkness, which is a documentary on the making of the movie Apocalypse Now, a few people know that Martin Sheen had a heart attack. And Coppola didn't want it known because everyone, if you haven't noticed, the Sheen family look a lot alike. So his brother filled in, if you've seen the movie, for all those scenes with the voiceover. So at some point in the documentary, the studio says, well, we've got to tell people about his heart attack, and what if he dies? And Coppola, who's just in a state of just emotional collapse over his film falling apart, says, Martin Sheen is not dead until I tell people he's dead.
Exactly.
You know, and I still laugh at that. I thought it was one of the funnier lines. And he certainly didn't mean it the way it came out, but in his own way he did.
But that's his business.
Yeah.
Ashley, you heard what TJ had to say, and I know the story. I know the ins and outs of that particular story. Clearly, the viewing public, and it was a very large viewing public, were being rooked by TV. That they had their quote live program, which wasn't quite live because they had everything planned out. That in my mind is a really poor way to do business. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely, but TJ, it's about selling ads, isn't it? It's all about the advertisers and who's.
Well, let's put it this way: if you're doing a real news show, you better be doing the truth. In this case, it was one of those pseudo news shockumentary entertainment shows. By the grace of something that took place, in that case, I guess if you're doing shockumentary stuff, all it counts is the ad time that you can sell. Did I drop enough of a bombshell?
No.
You were.
You know, TJ, both Ash and I are members of the Television Academy and vote for Emmys, and we have our friends in the news just are innumerable, so we have this ongoing conversation with them. Because they don't like a great deal of how things are selected and the manner in which the news is presented. It's a controversy, as you know. Well, you have your own feelings, and you're in the business.
Oh, yeah. I mean, believe it or not, in TV, it is all formula. I would say not in all TV, but in most TV, there's a formula to how it's prioritized.
Absolutely.
Oh, yes. We've seen our share of that.
And I think that's wild, why part of the reason you were saying earlier about child abuse is not really out there in the news on a daily basis, or the fact that there's sexual abuse on a daily basis, because it's not newsworthy.
Well, no, I think the term, Ash, as you well know, is it's not sexy.
There you go.
That's the correct
thing. Can't sell soap suds on that one.
Yeah.
No.
So, TJ, would it be fair to say that you called up the producer and graciously bowed out?
Yeah, I did. I was in the backseat of the car, and thinking about it the whole way, and I waited till I was just about to where my house was, and I said, hey, I can't do this anymore. Just reported on my radio show with a call-in that that person who was missing was not. Therefore, the facts went out on my radio station's newscast, and here an hour later, I'm on TV having to pretend like nothing ever happened. I said, that's my credibility. That's my stock and trade. Thank you very much. I'll go do this back home. I don't think I need the national TV spotlight right now.
Yeah. Good for you. It is difficult at times. To survive within what I call the corporate atmosphere of right now the news. It's no longer the days of Edward R. Murrow.
No, far from it.
missing kids TV.
Yes.
You've just listened to the story. I'd love to get your comments. I mean, have told us that you're not a professional reporter.
No. I'm just one person. I had a son 5 years ago, and that kind of changed my life and changed my views on life in general. I'm just a guy who's passionate about this sort of thing, and I started a YouTube channel. I had a Facebook page, you know, facebook.com/missingkidstv. And I actually did an experiment similar to what TJ was talking about, where I posted posters of a missing person, and it turned out that this person was actually found, and they had that person walk through the park shortly after I had posted the posters, and nobody like noticed that they were walking through the park. So I mean, yeah, that's actually, you know, pretty, you know, common thing actually. It's kind of goes to what I was talking about earlier about how people have the if it doesn't affect me, I don't care attitude, and that we need to start changing people's you know, minds on that. You know what I mean?
I agree with your earlier statement. A lot of this is denial. You know, people just don't want to admit that any of this is going on, because they admit it's going on, they have to do something about it. And I want to point out something that bothers me, is the prevalence of these people is higher in highly religious areas. There are some areas, and one of them I'll point out, for instance, there was a time in the 80s, I have not looked at the statistics since, where the area around Tempe, Arizona, one of the outlying little cities there, had the highest rate of MDSOs, which are mentally disordered sex offenders, of any area or county in the Arizona area, and probably at one point one of the highest numbers around. So this seems to occur to a great extent in areas where you would not expect that to happen.
Oh, Manny, are we going to start poking forks in Mormons again?
Well, you can't help it. They keep lending themselves to court.
I'm still stuck on the priest. I haven't gotten over the priest allegations and the fact that before you two came on, I was reading a report from, there were 192 dioceses that did a study on the priest, and they found that they had these encrypted IDs so that no one would know their names. And when they looked at the encrypted IDs, they discovered there were 4,392 priests that were not withdrawn it was known that they had were sex offenders or had been accused of being sex offenders from 1950 to 2002.
Okay.
I mean, that just appalled me. And the abuse went on more than one person.
Right. I can't resist. I've got to put the ball in TJ's court. The whole Catholic Church sex abuse thing... You got any thoughts?
Well, as a guy who converted to Catholicism about 6 years ago, I was aware of some of the stories at that time that had come out. I had not ever met a priest personally who was like that, or who had ever been charged, or who had ever been accused for that matter. We've had these things happen in like towns or something a few counties away and what have you. It did not stop me from going to that faith, but it sure makes me question anybody and everybody who is in a position of power. And I don't care if it's in your religion or if it's in your politics or if it's in your school. Always question that power. Always question what the motive is sometimes.
Well, I have a slightly different experience. I'm a veteran. I was born and raised a Catholic, went to private Catholic schools all my life, and this has been a problem in the Catholic Church as long as I can remember. I was aware of it well, and even in my preteens, I was aware that there were problems. There was always a priest that nuns sort of kept you away from. I had this conversation with a lady who worked for us off and on, a Latina from El Salvador, and how her mother always sort of kept them away from certain priests. And so there's always been this undercurrent in the Catholic Church that's been very disturbing that nothing was done about it. And one of the things that always bothered me was this repeated profile that seemed to indicate that there was some connection between the personality who elected to become a Catholic priest and a personality who coincidentally ultimately became a pedophile. And it's something the Catholic Church really needs to deal with. And
they do.
As a lot of our opinions, we're not sure that they do as much as they should, because there's always that culture of silence among them.
You're absolutely correct. That culture has to be changed. I think that because more light has been shed on it, I do know that they have the Safe Kids Initiative that in every Catholic church, when you're dealing with children with CCF, you're dealing with children at any level, there always must be two adults present. You have to go through the training. And by and large, it doesn't say too much about who keeps tab on the priest, but I do believe that the priest must have to be in a situation where adults are present in his presence too, if I remember the guidelines correctly.
Yeah,
it doesn't stop it, but addresses some of it.
Well, I think they are addressing it, my feeling is some of this is long overdue because of the impact that it's had, and the fact that the Catholic Church did push us under the rock pile for as long as they could, because, you know, like any group, they're sometimes more concerned about being embarrassed than they should be other issues.
And when you look at the profile of the priests that were accused, they fit the profile. They are like,
What is the profile for the? I missed you earlier. You were talking about it during the conversation.
They were abused as children. They had sexual abuse as children. They have alcoholism. They have so it's a repetition of what happened as children. And within the accusation of the priests, they had abused more than one child. And they went for a younger age. So the child got old, they went for the younger age. The child got old, they went for a younger age. I mean, that's a profile of a pedophile, isn't it?
I was going to say this would cut across any kind of religious or economic strata. Would it not? I mean, for that kind of a profile. But was the thought that the priest was actually trying to, by joining the seminary, trying to remove himself from being around children in some way, shape, or form, or looking for some kind of salvation or looking for some kind of help, but only found himself in a downward spiral once he got into being the pastor of a parish?
Wait, Ashley.
No, Ashley, there's a lot of books been written on this. There's a lot of time devoted by the Catholic Church. There are similarities in the personality. I'm not saying that they all become this way, but the similarity in personalities mean that at some time in their life, they are faced with this temptation, and this is a very difficult temptation with them. To say that they all come in like this isn't what we're saying. What we're saying is they have similar character flaws, not being comfortable in the general public, for example. There was a lot of priests are men that really were not comfortable in the male world, and by comfortable as their interests, maybe they're deeply religious, whatever the cause, they just don't fit. But that's also a common thing among pedophiles, is they just supposedly don't fit. So what it amounts to is that personality is obviously subjected to more stress as they get older, and that stress shows up in this particular area.
And we're talking about the priests that were accused of that group. It's a group that we're talking about specifically.
Yeah.
That they fit
okay,
that
good. I'm glad you made that clarification, because I haven't met one who fit that description in the slightest. So.
Right.
Well,
it was that profile of the ones accused.
But I can tell you from spending a lifetime in the Catholic Church, that would be said of every other pedophile I've ever seen, having experienced some of the major issues here in Los Angeles, as well as the ones that went on in Boston, where pedophile were sent for primarily because they were hard to identify in this particular area, because we have a larger number of people. And that's one reason pedophilia is more of a problem in a major city, Los Angeles, is because a large number of people exposes, you know, not only them to having more children, but also it plays the numbers. Parents are less involved, they're more likely to work. In your tighter community, there's a greater parental participation in school, which makes it difficult. And I think there are a great many reasons why the Catholic Church and other groups have sent them to major cities where they felt they could be absorbed in, and it just didn't work. And I'm not criticizing the Catholic Church for the efforts it took. It's I criticize them, as I would anyone else, for the fact that they didn't just come front and center with it, and then when the news came out, they tried to hide it instead. But
and still, a lot of these priests still never got, and nothing happened to them. They didn't. They're still practicing priests.
Well, I don't agree with that. I think the Catholic Church has done a great job of weeding those people out since it started, and I don't agree that right now, as in 2012, they're really pedophile priests around unless they've been able to conceal it from the church. But wherever the church has had any indication that this was so, they have taken substantial efforts to stop this.
And TJ, I think your point, because it's not about stereotyping priests or stereotyping any particular group. It is about awareness of anybody in power who can take advantage of children. This needs to have awareness.
Oh, yeah, indeed. I don't care what organization you're with, or even if it's just a family structure. If they, always question power, always question why somebody feels that need for it. Always do that. I don't say be an angry person, but in the back of your mind, ask those questions.
No, I agree. That's a very, very good point. I wonder if our, as a parent, our caller in has any feelings whatsoever about that, because this is a parental issue.
Yeah, sure. I'd like to bring up a point real quick, if I could, there. First off, anyone that's listening to this in the chat room, as well as to anyone that may be listening to this later on a replay, I'd like to point out a website that you can check out. It's familywatchdog.us. If you type in your address into that particular website, it will tell you the list of all sexual predators that live in your neighborhood. So, if you want to know, like, if your neighbor is a sexual predator, type in your address in that webpage, and you'll be able to know. familywatchdog.us.
And they have local ones as well as there in
Los
Angeles.
Well, that's the one that
also.
I know of. I mean, I'm sure there's others, but I wanted to say that. But On a separate issue, I want to put a mental image into the minds of all the people that are listening to this for a moment here. Okay, now just imagine that you're at a zoo for a moment. Okay, and oh my God, there are people that have gotten into the tiger pit. Now the tigers are the sexual predators in the world. Okay, and the people that are in the tiger pit are the people that are listening to this show and others that are not aware of this. Okay, now. People like TJ and me and whoever, we are people that are standing outside the cage, okay? And we're throwing guns, we're throwing dart guns to them, okay, by giving these web pages and hosting shows like this and stuff. We can yell and scream all day long about how there are guns there, save yourselves. But if the people don't pick up the guns and do something about it, then we're just wasting our time. That people that are listening to this show, they need to take action. Okay, I have my Facebook listed up right now. I know whether or not people that are listening to this show are clicking on these links. Okay, and I know that nobody has yet. Okay, people need to go and take these kinds of steps. If people do nothing, then the predators win.
That's actually a very good point. TJ, you're older than dirt. Well, not really.
Much fossil there.
I mean, you're younger than I am, and I'm younger than Manny is.
It's not an exclusive club for everybody out there. It happens to everybody, and it's going to happen to old Simon sooner than he thinks.
Right, but. TJ, I know that have a granddaughter.
I have four. I have four.
You
congratulations.
Have four. where have we all gone wrong? I mean, it seems to me that when you and I, and even Manny, were kids, the world was a safer place, or am I wrong? Is it just that we didn't realize the danger?
Well, I don't know.
I think
wait a minute.
Go ahead,
TJ. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just know that when I was a kid, sometimes your parents would kind of protect you from the real world a little bit more so. You only had three channels on TV, if you had TV at all. And, you know, the radio was pretty much happy talk, and the newspapers, which there was something diabolical happening that involved a child, was usually buried back a page or two because they didn't want that to be a reason for you to not pick up that paper if that was on the front page. So I think a lot of things I still maintain this is a very disgusting issue, and it always will be in my heart. Those things, they just didn't figure prominently in news or talking about it because of the disgust factor was so high. And I think that our parents, God love them, they just tried to sanitize our world a little bit better for us back then.
Yes, perhaps too much so, which was what led to the 60s rebellion. Most of the kids in the 60s were sick of their parents basically censoring their life, and that was part of what went on. And that was very part of the Vietnam War syndrome with people, with kids rebelling against their parents. They were rebelling across the board.
Mm-hmm. I think the beauty of the Internet is that it's brought so much more to us at our door, and we have the ability of actually going in and looking at statistics and understanding, and awareness can be raised through that. So I think, Simon, it's always been there, and I just think that we've become more aware of it because of the availability of this information.
I think you're right.
And also, I do think another thing, and one other thing I think is one of the earlier I was talking about cultures, and we have a lot of cultures throughout the world that do horrific things to children, and they believe that's part of their culture. They do sexual mutilation still in, I think it's 18 countries, to women at age 5 years old. They're mutilated, their clitoris and all of their sexual outer parts are cut off with knives and blades. It's part of a ritual. Then they're stitched up, and in other countries. And then, of course, these children now will come to this country, and they're going to bring their culture with them to this country. In fact, there's a ruling right now where some people are arguing with the FDA because it's banned in this country, obviously, this particular ritual, where people are saying we should allow it in this country because this culture is coming to this country, and the children will then go back to their culture to feel safe within their village of 18 different countries. I'm sorry. You got to stop it.
Where's the national organization of women on this issue? They've been dreadfully silent ever since this came about, that people started knowing about this in the 70s. And to be quite honest with you, I'm about damn tired of that, too. I mean, this mutilation of children like this, I'm sorry, I'm passionate. I've got two daughters, four granddaughters. I've read so many horrible stories where this is done with rusty scissors if they can't find anything else. And because this happens to women, I am just appalled that the National Organization of Women and folks like them have not said a peep about this horrific thing. There are other organizations you should be piping up to, but they stay silent. I want to know what their cover is.
And I want to know why, as corporations, American corporations go to these countries. We feed them. We give them all sorts of things of our tax dollars. Yet we know this is going on in their culture, and we permit it.
If it's happening on their land, what can we do besides, other than just take our products and go home, which I think they should?
They should. Absolutely they should. There should be a moratorium on it, and they should not be allowed to do this. And again, we're here. So for me, how is it ever going to get better if you're allowing cultures like that to come here and bring that culture here?
Well, just go to the suburban area of Detroit. That happens every day. You know, the whole thing. I would be willing to bet you that within these 18 countries, the silent thing is that women are for producing children, and boys are for fun. Just hang around on Ramadan and find out sometimes in some of these 18 countries what really flies.
Mm-hmm. Well, I couldn't agree with you more. But the real issue in our country, which we don't have time for because it's all over 5 week discussion, all joking aside, is why we give foreign aid to countries who we so vehemently disagree with the manner in which they treat people. And it just appalls me So we're still giving money to countries who don't like us, don't agree with us, don't follow any of our rules, and basically take our money and stick their thumbs to their nose about us.
Do you know about this one, TJ? Where they had, there's two clamps that they were using on circumcision in this country, and it was banned. It's banned. FDA finally said we're banning it because it had mutilated babies. The head of their penises were being cut off, or skins were being cut off. And it was Moya, I think, I forget the name of the clamp, but the clamp would go over the head, and then it was part of the Jewish religion. They were allowed to do this in other religions. So they now banned it in this country, took it to Africa, and in 2 years they have done 2 million circumcisions using this clamp in Africa on babies.
Mm. Probably unbelievable.
Probably right now. Bill Gates.
I mean, my eyes are watering right now.
I'm horrified, Simon.
Same here. Now, I understand that, conversely, in San Francisco, all circumcision has been banned. But what have they done about the genital mutilation of girls?
Yep.
Blind eye.
Yep.
Well, it's this classic double standard. And it's funny, you have daughters, so this concerns you a great deal. But until some men have granddaughters, they don't become concerned, or daughters or granddaughters, they don't become as concerned with these issues as they should be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the problems, too. You know, and when you look at your own life, when did you become this active? When you looked at your children and said, oh, my God, this is happening to them.
Well, I got to tell you, when my son was born, he was the oldest, and I was there for that delivery. You know, it was the 70s, and fathers finally started taking an active role, and instead of pacing and passing out cigars like they did all the work, they actually went in there and helped. It was the most beautiful thing, and I took my job as a father so much more seriously watching my children being born than I think I could have ever taken it, having not gone through that experience with my wife.
Yeah, but, you know, you have a heart and you care, and you went into this caring. Not everybody is that way. And some people, including myself, are squeamish. And, you know, there's an old joke in Beverly Hills. What's the difference between what's the definition of Beverly Hills lawyer? It's a Jewish boy who can't stand the sight of blood. And even though I'm not Jewish, it's certainly applied to me, because if I could have stood the sight of blood, I probably would have gone to medical school. So for some of us, that is an issue. I don't know that I could do that. And I certainly didn't do it with my children. I preferred to be in a poker game downstairs.
Well, so did my dad. So.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
And it didn't hurt you either, did it, DJ?
No. He loved me the same
when,
as you
when,
did.
When my first child was born, doctor came out and said, it's going to happen. Do you want to come and watch? And my reaction was, hell no. I'll be the guy pacing up and down.
Yeah, it affects all of us. You know, Simon, look into the clock. We just burned a huge amount of time. You know, TJ, I'm so happy you joined us. You're welcome anytime. Simon had said this was a subject dear to your heart, and your input has been very special. We appreciate it, and we want to
thank
our caller in for his contributions. We hope that listeners heed his thoughts. I thought he gave us some wonderful thoughts and advice for the day. And Simon, what do you have to add to all of this?
Well, I'd like a last comment from TJ. We're about a minute 40 from going off air, so make it quick.
Okay, first of all, folks, read up on anything you possibly can about this subject, and then contact your lawmakers, and then do what you can within your community groups, whether it's your school, whether it's your church, whether it's someplace active, because all things like this start at home. And also, hug your kids, would you? Tell them you love them. And also teach them to be on the lookout for those who would do the harm.
Ashley, your comments, and it was great to have you on the air again.
Thank you, Simon. thank you for having me on, Simon and Manny. That was really nice of you guys. And again, at TJ, I'm with you. It's about awareness and just being vigilant with awareness so that then you keep yourself safe.
And missing kids, thank you for joining us.
Do you have a
quick comment for us?
Just thank you for having me, and maybe you do likewise on Friday at 1 p.m. Central. Maybe you can call in on my show. You know, who knows, you know. Get the word out there. Get awareness going. Like, share, tell your friends. Make a difference.
That's great.
Okay. Till next week, this is Barlingham Barrett. Oh, well, actually, I'm the Barrett part. Wishing everyone a happy and safe week. And we'll be back again next Sunday. Till then, goodbye.